Okay, what's up, everybody? My name's Alex Aiken.
I'm Justin Aiken.
Andrew Aiken.
As you can guess, we're all brothers. We are riders for the Grand Tour Nation.
Also, we like cars.
We love cars too. We're going to be starting a new video podcast for you. The Madagascar special, still not out. So we're like, heck, we could do this. So we're just going to be creating some content for you. We're going to be going over a lot of news articles that are on our website. If you haven't already, subscribe, GrandTourNation.com. We bring you the latest and greatest news.
Check it out.
Check it out there. We're just going to hop right into it. Oh, we got a exclusive interview with the American.
The American.
We know that guy. He was the team racing driver, kind of replaced the Stig on the first season of the Grand Tour.
Yep.
And we get to sit down and talk with him. We're going to get to that in a minute. We're going to go over some news real quick. First up is Jeremy Clarkson admits supercars are dead and driven by ghastly people.
I'm not sure how to feel about that.
Honestly, Jeremy Clarkson looks kind of ghastly in that picture. So.
Look at him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing coming from somebody who's driven supercars literally their whole life.
Their whole life.
Yeah.
He says, I think we're going to have to face up to the fact that the supercar is dead.
Oof.
I don't think that's an accurate statement by a long shot.
I agree with you, though.
Really?
My err on the side of Jeremy with this one. Who buys a supercar? When's the last time you saw one? There's no way they're turning that much of a profit.
When's the last time I saw a supercar?
Exactly. We saw a Huayra on the way home from work one day.
Yes, we saw a Pagani Huayra.
Yeah, made my whole year.
That's what
made 2020 a little bit better.
It made your whole year, but
yes,
one day driving home from work.
Yeah, literally one of the most rare supercars.
That might be the
hypercar, if you will.
Yeah,
and we saw it going home from work. I was like, "Damn, that's sweet." I think that's the whole point of a supercar.
Okay, yeah, to make somebody's day. What does Jeremy say right there? He said they're too big and they're too powerful. What's his whole premise? Speed and power, right?
Speed and power.
What happened to Jeremy?
And driven by gas. Okay.
That's one thing. Jeremy Clarkson is changing his stance on a lot of things.
Yeah, he is.
Including this. Jeremy Clarkson of the Grand Tour has changed his mind on climate change.
What was it to begin with?
I'll show you what it was to begin with. He would mock the whole thing. Look at this.
Go full screen on that.
Remember this.
Absorb carbon dioxide, breathe out oxygen.
He's gained a few pounds.
Why not put plants in the exhaust system of your car?
Good question.
Listen to the music. He's roasting it.
Might say so, but what does he know? What we have here is a Range Rover, which now has the same 5-litre V8 that you get in the Jag.
The Jag.
At the back, we have tubes which take the exhaust gases into this greenhouse, which is full of plants. Tomato plants on this occasion. And that means the tailpipes emit no greenhouse gases at all. What you're looking at here, ladies and gentlemen, is the future.
Okay, so he goes from that, which he's totally roasting the whole concept and ends up crashing it on the field or on the track out there. But there's video.
Even Jeff, right? Isn't that the
car? The electric car right there.
Yeah.
But he said that he's changed his mind on climate control.
Wow.
Saying, let's see here. He says that he has started a farm, diddly squat, to combat the loss of our insects. He says, if we lose our insects, we're in for a very bumpy ride.
Okay.
This is just kind of crazy coming from him after he's bashed climate control for so many years.
Maybe he's been on the farm a little too long.
Flip-flopping.
Maybe he's grown a green thumb in his old age.
He might have.
Maybe that's it.
He could be.
Or maybe it's Jeff Bezos' signature on his
paycheck. Oh, yeah.
So you think maybe...
I have a little bit to do with it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, all this does come after his switch to the Grand Tour.
Yeah.
Okay, next up we've got... IMBD has released the date for the release to the Grand Tour Madagascar special. Oh, wait, they didn't. That's wrong. That's the second time they've done it. They released the wrong date.
Wow.
And
what was the last time they came out with the special? It's been a month.
It's been almost a year. It's been 11 months. Wow. I think today when semen came out.
That was kind of a letdown. I thought semen was.
I haven't seen semen.
It was a
you'll get
big
it.
Production of semen, but I don't think it was that good.
Yeah, it was.
I mean,
kind of went into it.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, so they go from cars to boats. I mean, it worked when they did the Vietnam special.
Yeah.
They went from
but cars they're still like motoring.
To you know, motorcycles.
Still right. On the road.
But boats was a little bit of a stretch. Everybody didn't really like it. They hated it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been almost a year since Semen was released.
Yeah.
And we're still waiting. We haven't heard anything from the Grand Tour.
Hmm.
And all they've done is post false release dates. So we're kind of wondering what's going on.
Yeah, why are they waiting?
Of course.
And sure. It's been fully edited, and it's been that way. It's been wrapped up, fully edited, and it's been sitting at Amazon for months.
Well, you figured everybody cooped up from COVID, this would be the perfect time to release it.
The sudden flip-flop on climate change is an effort to get somebody from Amazon to release the tapes.
Oof.
I don't know.
It could be.
Could be some internal struggles there.
Internal struggles. Who knows? But
it's been a struggle since they switched to the Grand Tour, in my opinion.
In your opinion.
Some would say that, maybe.
Some would say. We've been waiting almost a year. Get on with it. Release it. And they've wrapped up the Scotland special, too. They've wrapped it up. And they've started editing it. Hmm. And I don't know if they're done editing yet, but
yeah.
It's like, what are you waiting on? Maybe they'll release them at the same time. Next up, UK is locking back down. Jeremy Clarkson says this is a ludicrous path to self-destruction.
Wow.
That's a 30-day lockdown.
Bold statement.
Coming to combat coronavirus. He said it'll be heartbreaking and that most of his favorite shops in London are shut down.
Yeah. Well, he's had some run-ins with old Boris before. He's been on the show, though.
Yeah.
He
was on old Top Gear.
Yeah. He was.
I wonder how Diddly Squat is going to do with all these shutdowns.
Yeah, maybe everybody. Maybe that's why he started a garden, because he thinks the economy's going to crash. Moving on. Sean Connery, James Bond actor, has died at 90 years old.
Rest in peace.
Moment of silence for that.
R.I.P. Sean Connery. He was a legend. Look at this picture.
Complete legend.
Look at him.
Oh, man.
The ultimate petrol head.
They call him the greatest living Scotsman.
I have to agree.
I believe it.
When you think of him, you think of an Aston Martin, though.
Right.
Or I do.
That's what I said. He really brought the Aston Martin to life in James Bond.
Absolutely.
One of those beautiful cars.
Look at that car. It's epic. And they're bringing the new old Aston back in the new James Bond film, as we've seen from the trailer.
It's been in previous ones before.
Yeah.
I think, too.
Well, to begin with, because you think of James Bond, like this younger generation who hasn't seen absolutely everyone, because, you know, they're kind of unwatchable. But
I agree.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always.
Classic kind of way, though.
Yeah. It wasn't always an Aston. That's all the news we have for you now. Right now, we're going to throw it to the American interview. You're going to want to watch this.
It's a good one.
Yeah, he goes in depth behind the scenes of the Grand Tour, stuff you wouldn't really know about. Talks about his car history.
Exclusive.
Exclusive interview with Grand Tour Nation. He talks about his time as a teammate to Dale Earnhardt, which is pretty cool. So you'll want to hear this. Stay tuned. Subscribe to us. We have a lot more big things coming. Believe me, you're going to want to see this.
Huge things.
Huge.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Start here. Okay. We're sitting down here with the American. How you doing, Mike?
I'm great. Having a little coffee this morning. Finally got rid of this storm down here in Florida. Probably play a little golf this afternoon.
Right on. So, the Grand Tour started out. Jeremy Clarkson, Richard Hammond, and James May left the BBC, went to Amazon, and they got some NASCAR hillbilly to be their race car driver. How did you wind up doing that?
It was kind of an odd deal. I got on a short list of either retired drivers or other hillbillies in the States. To do it, and I was approached, and they asked if I could come to Virginia to VIR to do a screen test, and we did, and it obviously came out good enough that they thought they'd give it a shot.
That's good. Okay,
awesome.
So, how did this come about? I know that you met with Andy Willman, the producer of the show. What was that conversation like? What, did they plan out your character at all or give you any heads up of what you'd be doing?
Well, they at first not so much, but as we went, they did plan out my character, and my conversations with Andy was really intriguing, and I thought it was going to be a pretty cool deal. They planned on working me in more instead of just being the grumpy American that hated everything that they did and hated everything except American Muscle. That was cool for a while, but really felt like they told me that they were going to implement me more in and do a few more things and have me do some stuff with the other host. And it just didn't happen. I guess in a time frame that I thought was where it should have, but it was fun working with them. I worked with Jeremy, and he was great to work with. Definitely a pro at what he does, and it was pretty cool because the first time we went over there, we were in hiding. This thing, I mean, there's paparazzi in the trees looking for what's going on, and stuff. It was weird. Never been in a situation like that before, but it was a lot of fun. The first night we met, we went and had dinner, had a couple cocktails, and Jeremy says, "Are you gonna go to bed, or are you gonna be a man and have a nightcap?" You know, I'm like, says, "Us Brits know how to drink." I'm like, "Oh, do you now?" So. I probably corrupted him a little bit that night. We both had to be on our game the next morning. And I got to say, we were probably a little foggy.
Yeah.
Nice. What would you say your most memorable moment on the Grand Tour would be, whether it be driving a car or just being with the fans? Like, what was your favorite moment at the Grand Tour during your time?
Well, I never really got to intermingle with the fans other than when I was recognized somewhere. Obviously the show has a huge following. There was a lot of hype about the show. And, you know, I would go to London and spend an evening and rest. And then I would go film, and then I'd come back and I'd have to wait for the airplane. So I was out in the city, you know, a couple of times each time I flew over there to do the show. And we would normally get recognized by somebody, and then the next thing you know, you had a crowd wanting to talk about the show. So it was a most memorable moment. You know, I don't know, it was probably that first night with Jeremy, and the next day we drove the Vulcan, which was the coolest car I probably drove on the show. It reminded me so much of a American race car. You know, it was very clingy and clangy and crude, but really fast, really cool car. And they had all the engineers there, and they was all flipped out, you know, worried about everything. And mm-hmm. I drove the thing off in the corner and spun it out.
Oh man!
Backed it up in the grass, and you know, cranked it up and drove back to our little pit area, and they're all flipped out. Oh, you know that deflector on the back, it's like 25,000 pounds. And I'm like, well, did we hurt it? And they said no. I said, well, then let's get on with it. And I just shrugged it off, and they thought, oh my God, he spun the cars. Like, oh my gosh, you guys are flipped out over shit that you shouldn't be. But anyway, that was probably the time I spent with Jeremy, and that particular ride was one of the coolest things that we got to do on the show. I drove another car, ran off the racetrack, and was knocking little trees down and all kinds of stuff, and got back on the racetrack, and they were all flipped out about that. I was like, okay, did we hurt it? No. Okay, let's go. And I don't think they could understand how I could roll stuff off and move forward. And they were trying to tell me, you know, they can't really tell how fast you're going, so you don't have to drive this thing on the ragged edge all the time. And I'm like, well, that's what I do. So,
yeah,
you know, if I tear up one of your cars, I'm sorry, but that's just how it is. And I think that was the start of the end right there, because they were a little flipped out over that. But that's just who I was. I was not going to change. I didn't feel like I had to prove myself as a race car driver. I enjoyed doing that. And it was really hard for me, because there were several of the cars that I drove on the Grand Tour that I just thought was the coolest cars ever. And my job was to make them sound like they were shit. Mm. They were terrible. And that was tough for me, because it's you're acting. It's acting. I'm like, well, I'm not an actor. It's hard for me. And I don't remember lines. I like to roll off the heel. And a lot of the stuff that was said that came from me, a lot of it was scripted, but a lot of stuff made the show that was just me rolling off the hip, just ad-libbing. And I feel like those were the best episodes, when they just let me talk and do my own thing. And I think what they were trying to make sure that I got the bullet points in there, and I probably wasn't very good at that.
Yeah. So a lot of fans were very critical of the first season, saying that it was very scripted, and even you saying that they wanted
I didn't like about it.
Yeah, even you saying that they wanted you to trash the cars. I mean, how much dishonesty was going on? I mean, what in all was behind the scenes as far as authenticity? I mean, was it everything a total sham?
No, the show is, I thought the stuff that they did that was outside of what I did, I thought was very hokey. I think that they could have done a much better job with that, instead of dropping bodies out of the sky and goofy crap like that. It was kind of stupid, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of stuff that was very honest. It's entertainment. They're in the entertainment business, so they're being paid to entertain. I think as far as the cars and all that stuff goes, that's just part of the entertainment value. What I didn't like about that season was, when we went over there, rain or shine, we ran. And so you'd have an amazing car, and I'm not going to mention which cars or whatever, because it's not fair to them.
Yeah.
That was just an amazing car, and it'd show up way down the list on speed. And I'm like, that's bullshit. That car's fast.
Yeah.
But when they show the deal, they would never say the lineup. They would never say, well, we'd ran this in the wet. We ran it in, this was in the dry. Yeah. So in all fairness, this car would potentially have been on top or right below the Vulcan or whatever. And it ends up, 12th or 13th. So that part of it, I felt like was not fair to the viewers or the manufacturers, because these manufacturers are donating their car to be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way to market their stuff, in my opinion. And if their car shows up below a car that it'll just smoke, it's not really fair to them. So I struggled with that a little bit. All in all, they had such a large following that it was just kind of hard to screw it up, because their following was so loyal to them. Reminded me a lot of the NASCAR following.
Yeah, a lot of the fans are just motorheads, and they come there just for the cars, and like, they're looking for the next car they might own. What do you think would be the best car you drove for the value? Like, what was the most underestimated car that you drove?
Oh God, that little Ford, God, I forget, FS? Yeah, I think it was an FS. All-wheel drive.
RS. Was it the blue one?
RS, I guess. Yes, that little thing. It's a little shitbox car with 300-some horsepower, all-wheel drive, and it's got some computer stuff in it that basically a gazillion times per second tells which wheel to pull. it was really hard for me to learn how to drive it because it'll almost do itself. It's that car is practically idiot proof. I'm a professional race car driver. I have to drive off the seat of my pants. I have to feel where the back end and the front end of the car is, so I know how much gas to give it. That car there, you just put it on the floor and it did all your thinking for you. It was pretty hard to screw it up. And that car was very, very impressive. It's kind of a American made manufacturer, by the way.
Yeah. Go America, baby.
That was a Ford. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you did eventually end up leaving the Grand Tour. Mm-hmm. Can you take us back to that conversation? You know, why, what happened? Did anything happen that we didn't know about?
Well, they didn't develop my character, mm-hmm. like I said, and it got to where it was just more acting, which, you know, that's what I signed up for. In their defense, I probably wasn't a very good actor. I wasn't very good with lines. I was more of a off the hip guy. And I really got a bad taste in my mouth when they would fly me over there. We tried to cram too much into the time that we had. Instead of just taking an extra day or so and really refining stuff, and really, if I didn't do the lines right, instead of chopping it all up, make me do it again until I got it right. It's just, that's the way they make movies. So I don't know why this would be any different. And once again, I probably wasn't very good at that in their defense, but what I was good at is evaluating the cars. And what I was good at was getting the American people to understand these cars. And what I was good at was driving these cars, whether it was wet or dry. So I just feel like the not developing things and flying all the way over there, taking 4 days of my life to do a 1 day shoot. To me, they were focused too much on dropping bodies out of the sky instead of what was really going on with the cars. And I don't know if that was Andy. I really don't know who that was, but they had some really, really good people that I worked with over there, and really smart people, and they really did a great job. I feel like we were shortchanged a little bit on time, and a lot of times weather would implement what happened, and we probably should have, in my opinion, we probably should have said, you know what, you're just gonna have to stay a couple extra days. But it was always, well, we got to get here to shoot this, or we got to get there to do that, we don't have the time. I'm like, okay, well, you're damned if you take the time and you're damned if you don't. I understand you're busy, but if this isn't done right, then we're not getting anywhere. And then not interacting with the rest of the show in the crowds, I thought was really, I don't know. I don't think I stole any of their thunder, but I really feel like on the American side, we had a lot of following. We had a lot of people that thought that it was really funny and really cool. And they thought that it was cool that a NASCAR driver, a retired NASCAR driver, was over there working with those guys. And I really feel like they just kind of left that on the table and didn't develop it. So when I found out that they really wasn't interested in having me back, I was like, yes, I'm not interested in going back. So this job don't pay near enough to do it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, to win a race in NASCAR, whether it's the trucks, the Xfinity Series, or the Cup Series, everything has to go right. The pit crew has to be perfect. The day, the call on the box, the amount of air pressure, the way you enter and exit the corner or enter and exit pit road, everything has to go right. That makes us perfectionist. And they had some really qualified people over there doing these shoots that were perfectionist. But when you say, okay, you're going to have to stuff 10 pounds of crap into a 5-pound bag, and that's what was happening with time, we just kind of, I think we left a lot on the table.
Yeah, so that leads us to next question about Jeremy Clarkson. Did he ever go into any detail about the trio's former job at Top Gear? You know, like it was a large debacle what happened there with the producer and all that.
Yeah, he punches people.
Yeah, he likes to punch people. Did he ever talk about any of that to you before?
No, not really. I actually, Jeremy and I hit it off. We got along good. Mm. We only really met once. So, and the time we spent together was good. You know, I really, I think it was positive. We never really got into, all that, but you know, we had that in common. I punch people too. Now I'm old.
Okay. So, is there anything that you would tell Jeremy right now about how to, take the show, how to do it from on out here?
Well, I'd be the last person on earth he would ask where do we go next with the show?
Yeah.
My opinion is the same. It's always been. I really feel like those guys have such a wonderful following, and they're such talented people, and they're so good at what they do. I would probably bend toward the space of keeping it a little bit more authentic. Mm-hmm. Because what they naturally do is enough. And I don't know that they really got that figured out, that they're enough. Those guys do a good job. And I don't think they need to make it quite as hokey, trying to make it more entertaining. And maybe I just don't understand British humor. That might be the problem. Because it's probably me. It's just... I really feel like what they did on Top Gear was probably a little more authentic than what they're doing on the Grand Tour.
I think every Grand Tour fan would agree with that.
Exactly.
But yeah. Have you watched any of the episodes that have come out since you left the first season?
No. I've heard about I saw clips off of them, seen a lot of stuff on Twitter, and I'm voicing my opinion off of what I saw, and I saw enough of that, and I saw all the episodes the year that I was with them on the show, and then what they replaced me with was like, it was kind of, whoa, wait a minute, that might really work for the British audience, and that's probably their biggest audience, I don't know, but I feel like American, we're NASCAR over here. We're NASCAR people. And NASCAR used to be good old tobacco chewing rednecks. Well, it's not like that anymore. The smartest engineers in racing are obviously Formula One engineers and NASCAR engineers. And a lot of the Formula One engineers are now NASCAR engineers and vice versa. So our sport's pretty cool. And we have a huge, huge following. I really feel like they kind of missed the boat on taking advantage of that. It might have been a lack of research. It might have been Amazon. I don't know. I don't know whose decisions those were. In my opinion, I mean, I love Andy to death. He's a great guy, he was responsible. Kind of falls back.
Yeah. A lot of people could say you'd be the perfect person to combine NASCAR fans and Grand Tour fans. I mean, considering your past, I mean, teammates with Dale, which I think is the best NASCAR racer to ever exist. That's kind of a shame that wasn't able to happen. Would you like to go into more detail about your time with Dale and like what that was like?
Well, you know, he was obviously arguably the greatest driver, the most accomplished. There's arguments whether it would be Richard Petty or Dale Sr. or Jimmy Johnson. They all have 7 championships. They all won tons of races. I think Jimmy Johnson did it in a lot tougher era than Richard or Dale did. But Dale Earnhardt had the ability to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. I mean, he could just get it done. And you know, I don't really talk a lot about our time together, but I will say this. I feel like, and I would have been, we have no bad blood with the Grand Tour and Mike Skinner. There's no bad blood there. They might have some, I don't have any. I feel like they also missed the boat in not taking an episode toward the end of the season, bringing us back and reliving some stuff and make it cool. I had a truck, which you guys are aware of, that I took to Goodwood. It still holds the NASCAR record over there by a lot. Yeah. And it would probably outrun that Vulcan going up the hill at Goodwood. Matter of fact, it did outrun that Vulcan going up the hill. They brought the Vulcan to Goodwood that the same year that I drove it. And the truck was way faster. We really? Built an amazing NASCAR style vehicle that's a badass.
Yes.
Not having that on the show was totally missing the boat. We offered it. And it probably would have outran any car that we ran on the show. So I thought that would have been some pretty cool TV.
That would have been awesome. That would have been great.
I'm like, hey, what's this American pickup rust your fancy Aston?
Yeah. And I probably should have, you know, Jeremy, I'm not sure which one of them is the best driver. None of them are the best driver. It would have been a cool segment or a cool part of the show for us to work with them and instruct them and make it funny.
Yeah.
And then, you know, make an episode where we put one of those guys in the truck and let them drive it and put a second seat in there and have me in there instructing them. Would have been even really, really cool to have one of them, even if it wouldn't have been real, to have one of them outrun me, you know?
Yeah.
There was just a lot of stuff there that I felt like would have been good ideas, but that's why I'm a retired NASCAR driver and not the producer of the Grand Tour. So that's up to the producers and the powers to be to ever do something like that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, there was a lot of untapped potential there, especially in that first season. Sure. You know, it was new and made it anything they wanted to. And now they're not even doing the traditional, you know, have an audience, do a lap. It's just strictly the specials. So that might be gone forever.
Kind of leaves out the car aspect of it, which a bunch of motorheads love about the show.
But moving back into the cars, you have quite the collection yourself. We've seen you roll up and down the streets in that Corvette of yours. It sounds like jet airplane. Yeah, it
sounds like a demon rolling by.
Yeah. Oh, what's your favorite car you have?
Probably my stepfather's 72 Chevy truck. You guys have seen it around there.
Love that thing.
That thing, if it could tell stories. I mean, I did a lot of growing up in that thing and was successful enough in my career that I ended up with it in my possession and restored it, and it's my everyday driver. I really like that thing. The fastest car I've ever owned is obviously the Corvette. I don't even know how fast it'll go.
How many horsepower do you think it has?
It's just under 800 horsepower. It's about the same horsepower as the Vulcan and about the same weight. Might even be a little lighter. But it's a really, really fast street car. If that thing was four-wheel drive, it would be dangerous. Well, it's dangerous now, but it's a cool car. It's a fast car. I have a John Cooper Works Mini Cooper. Actually, it's my wife's car.
Oh, nice.
We fight over who drives that little car. And it's such a cool car. It's like a slot car. And I don't know why I don't bring it to the mountains. I did one year, and then you know, I thought, man, I'll kill myself in this thing because it's so fast through the corners. It will probably outrun my Corvette through the center of the corners.
Yeah,
really.
Corvette is such a monster when you step on the gas. It's a fun car to have up there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Is there anything that you're working on now in your career that you'd like to talk about? I know that you are have a hand in giving people that don't drive the opportunity to experience race car driving on the track.
Well, I did this before this horrible pandemic surfaced. I was doing some road course instruction. I was working with a guy in Texas, and we were doing some vintage racing, and we won some vintage races for him, and really, really enjoyed vintage racing. And we were driving old Corvette, an old Corvette with 800 horsepower. It was so cool because it drove terrible. And it was just such a handful, and it really brought out your driving skills to get it to go. And I really enjoyed that, but that's kind of went away now because of this pandemic. And I would really, really enjoy going back and doing more vintage racing. It's a different atmosphere. It's no stress, no pressure, just a lot of fun and a lot of camaraderie. So I love doing that. Angie and I are working on being some ambassadors for some RV, some bus companies, and we're working on some stuff to just continue the Skinner Roundup and have a little fun. I still enjoy playing golf. I'm not very good at it anymore.
Sure.
I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm Toby Keith. I'm good.
Yeah. There it is.
Exactly. So where can fans that want to see you again, where can they go to hear from you now? I know you've got a radio show.
Mm-hmm. Sirius XM, Channel 90. We're on there. We Skinner Roundup, MikeSkinner.com, Skinner 5 at where are we at?
Skinner 5 Media.
Skinner5media.com. Yeah. You see who my producer is. We have a lot of social media stuff. Angie runs most of that, and Ashley. They do a really, really great job. I really, I'm not really out there promoting Mike Skinner as much anymore. My wife Angie has a new voiceover business, and she is amazing. She rocks it.
Really?
Nice.
Along with the radio show, and just finding out, you know, we're like NASCAR. If you remember back in the day, of course you guys are pretty young. Like we had Lowe's on the 31 car, and that's the only sponsor we had on it all year, and some of their vendors. Nowadays, it is so expensive to do this, and it's so much harder to get these sponsors to spend the type of money that it takes to run up front in the Cup Series, that you have several different sponsors. So that's kind of what we're doing. We're not just doing the radio show. As you guys know, that doesn't pay that good.
No, it does not.
Wish it did.
I'm still interested in doing a little driver instruction, doing a little road racing. But she does voiceover, radio show, consulting. She also does events. Hell, I got her working. I don't need to work anymore.
You got it figured out now.
Yeah, she's making the money now.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, we'd like to thank you for coming on the show here. We hope to have you back. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, just I really enjoyed my time with the Grand Tour. I don't want to sound negative about it because I think those guys do a good job. I'm not a producer. I can't decide their shows for them. But anyway, it was a cool time, and we still get a lot of feedback, and you'd be surprised. Usually when I go somewhere, oh, there's Mike Skinner, who's a NASCAR driver, he was Dale Senior's teammate.
Yeah,
a lot of times you just go somewhere and they go, oh, the American, there's the American. And a lot of the young kids look at me as the American, and a lot of the old NASCAR people remind me as a NASCAR driver. So it's all good. We have a lot of fun, and that's
awesome.
It.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well,
thank you for coming on again, yeah. Mike. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. All right.
All good, guys.
We'll see you next time.